Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Friends don't lie. And she didn't. She told the truth. This is Pop Talk and Aliens. I am William Clear, and it is a podcast. Thank you for listening. This is a special episode I didn't plan in the lineup of upcoming shows, but I saw the show Stranger Things on the recommendation of my friend Kathy, and I got crazy about this show. So I am going to break down the show, everything I've learned. I'm going to pass on some secrets and break down the ending, look at what we might expect. And so if you haven't seen it, save this episode, come back later, and also watch it ASAP. I'll say right from the beginning that this will be a shorter show than usual because I'm going to just stick right to the point, Stranger Things and nothing else. I ate this show for breakfast, so I am going to feed you lunch, a lunch of it. Usually I don't watch long form TV because when it's over, especially if I binge watch it, I get depressed. So I never watch Mad Men, haven't seen the Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad. I saw a few of those, but I know they're great shows. I know they are, but I would get attached to them as if they were part of my real life. Battlestar Galactica, the Edward James Olmos recipe. I watched that show 70 episodes in about 10 days. It was a time when I was between jobs and I had about a week before I started my new job. So all I did was watch that show. And when it was over, I got the blues. Serious blues. It was like the last day of school when, you know, you never know if you're going to see those people again. And all of a sudden, something that you've been doing for months, every single day is gone. I got the blues. But Stranger Things, I figured this. I figured, okay, 8 episodes, I can handle that. Wrong. So, so wrong. It's one of the best TV shows I have ever seen. And when it was over, I had no idea what to do with myself. So why am I telling you this? Because there's a payoff for you. Because of my grief over the show ending, mainly because so many things were left unresolved, I scoured the internet for as much info as I could possibly find. What was going on with this character? What was this dangling thread of the plot all about? Who are the fuck are these brilliant actors? You know, and so on. It was like heroin. You can't just take the show away. I watched it for 8 episodes and I got hooked. So I needed a cool down transition back to life. I couldn't just go cold turkey. So got obsessed. Got down a rabbit hole of information, watched some YouTube videos, read some interviews, and I thought I'd put my obsession to work for you. That way you don't have to go looking all over for it, like I did. So, first question, everyone's asking, will there be a season 2? As of now, no announcement from Netflix. They've said that they would be dumb not to do it, but so fucking do it then. Strike while the iron is hot, bro. I mean, these kids... The kid actors, you have to remember, they're going to rocket through puberty over the next couple years. They're going to get lower voices, get taller, all kinds of changes. So you need to make it quick. The creators, though, the good news is they have thought this through because they are brilliant. Matt and Ross Duffer, you've watched the show. I know you have because you're still listening, so you know how brilliant these guys are. And they have said that if, probably when, they do season 2, it will actually jump ahead a year. And that's strictly because of the fact that they know what they're up against with growing teenagers. So they said season 2 is going to be more of a sequel than a season 2 because of the fact that there will have to be a jump and not just an immediate continuation, as most shows would do. So let's get into the show itself. We don't really need to bother setting up the premise, the 80s setting, which was by far the best recreation of the 80s I've ever seen. But we all know that. We've seen it, so let's start with the ending. The threads... The mysteries. Let's jump in. Where to start? Start with Hopper, played by the brilliant David Harbour. He's a guy that floated around a lot of TV, but I think he was more of a character actor, and this is his big break in terms of being a leading character. And obviously, he delivered in spades. But what about his story at the end of the show? Let's see. A lot of people love this character, as do I, but I think some people easily forget that he actually did go Lando. He sold out Eleven. He fucking sold her out. Told Matt Modine where she was, which directly resulted in her evaporation or death. We don't know. What we do know is that immediately following the Hawkins school gym massacre, which Hopper was also pretty much directly responsible for, he hops into a, black car with Matt Modine's goons. No Matt Modine, a.k.a. Papa, because he may be dead. Maybe, maybe not. We saw the Demogorgon confront him, but as they say in sci-fi, if you don't see someone die, they didn't die. So Hopper gets ushered away, no explanation given. Is he there to be briefed, tortured? Is he given talking points? We don't know. But I actually have some wild speculation about that. And the emphasis is on wild speculation, because this isn't even something that I've seen any people write online. This just came out of the twisted caves of my own head. So I'll put it out there. What if those goons told Hopper to try and lure Eleven back by putting waffles in secret boxes in the woods? What if he's still working for them? Because it's weird that he gets in that car, yeah? I mean, he already made his deal with the devil. So maybe there's more terms and conditions. It's a crazy theory, but, you know, I don't trust Lando. So we'll get back to the waffle thing in a moment, but what else do we have about Hopper? When he meets Eleven, before she goes into her homemade deprivation tank, he clearly knows who she is. Because when you go back earlier, a few episodes, he meets Trisha Ives, who was an MKUltra experiment. Which is a real thing, by the way, MKUltra. And definitely will be a subject of a future podcast. But anyway, he quote-unquote meets her, because she's all catatonic, so she can't talk to him or anything. So he talks to the sister, and Joyce is there. And the sister spills her guts that Trisha was pregnant. She miscarried, case closed. But she says that Trisha believed that the baby was born, named her Jane, and that she had super mind powers. And it was 12 years ago. Now, while she's saying this, they cut in clips of Eleven using her mind powers. So the show makes no effort to hide the fact that, yes, Jane is in fact Eleven. There's no ambiguity about it. And it's good storytelling. They don't need to waste a whole episode or two digging into that. You know, and that's why they could make this amazing story packed into 8 episodes, because they just lay out plot points once in a while. They don't have to stretch them out as a mystery that goes across 4, 5, 6 episodes. Jane is Ives' daughter. Jane is Eleven. And we know Hopper is well aware of that. He knows who she is when he meets her. So let's get to Eleven. Sweet, silent Eleven. One of the most fascinating and well-played characters I've ever seen on a TV show in a long time. And again, I don't watch a lot of the long-form shows, so I'm sure there are superior characters on Game of Thrones and shit. But for me, in this moment, EO Eleven, dude. Eleven is played by the way too talented Millie Bobby Brown. This girl, kid talents like this don't come around that often. I mean, I checked out all these kid actors to see where they came from, and I'll talk about them as well as we get to them. But this little girl, 12 years old, you can see how she acts, and she also sings. She's got a YouTube channel where she sings all these songs, and she's good. She's like a training boxer. Her resume stuff goes on and on. I couldn't even finish it. 12 years old. She does accents like a trained pro. And in real life, she's actually British, so her speaking voice sounds like, I don't know, a 30-year-old?
It was very important for me to make sure that viewers understood it and related to each of our characters.
I didn't know Kate Winslet played Eleven. This Millie Brown, she's all over Twitter and Instagram. She was the number one trending star on IMDb after the show became a hit. I don't know if she's had any acting training. She seems like the kind of person that doesn't need it. You know, some people just have it. You can skip the Stanislavski, the Stella Adler, skip all that stuff, just jump in. But I was talking to a friend who was not so impressed. I wouldn't shut up about how good Eleven was to him. I kept talking about it, and He said, yeah, you know, she's really good, but she only says like 20 things. And so in response to that, I offered him a cliche. She shows everything. So anyway, where's 11? Where is 11 in the season finale? Dead? Vaporized into another dimension? She made the ultimate sacrifice. The goddamn ultimate sacrifice. I kind of thought she was going to make it out of there alive. And I would have been perfectly happy if the show ended with her and Mike at the Snowball. Eating waffles, hand in hand. The innocence. Cheesy ending, but it would have pleased me. But obviously no way that can happen for a million reasons plot-wise, let alone the cheesiness. So where is she? When she shreds the Demogorgon into confetti, she herself does not turn into confetti. She just disappears. No body, no confetti. Stop saying confetti. The next reference of 11 after she's gone is Hopper leaving a Tupperware of food along with her beloved waffles in some sort of camper's box in the blistering snow. So what's up? Duffer's Brothers said, the audience doesn't know where she is. Maybe there have been sightings. Maybe Hopper knows where she is and he's helping her out. They also said, we like the idea of putting her and Hopper together. So there's a little dangling clue right from the creator's mouth. And it gives me comfort to know that she's pretty much 100% guaranteed to be alive. Could be Hopper leaves that food because he fucking feels guilty. Or it could be my crazy theory that he's trying to lure her back into the lab again upon orders from the Hawkins lab goons. That's probably 100% not likely, but you know, it's fun to speculate. But most likely, there hopefully will be some sort of productive relationship between the two if that's how they decide to go. The most interesting shot, though, takes place after he leaves the waffles. The next shot, there's a quick exterior of the buyer's home, but the next shot with action in it is the buyer's dog eating scraps off the counter. Then it cuts to the buyer's eating. There's no reason for that shot. There is no reason for that shot, except that earlier when Mike is about to kiss 11, he says, you'll be able to live in our basement and you'll be able to eat real food and not eat scraps like a dog anymore. So, waffles left for 11. Next shot, a dog eating scraps. There you go. Oh, and that kiss scene, the dude who plays Mike, Finn Wolfhard, said that Millie Brown was grossed out by the kissing scene because she had never kissed before. It's cute. But more on Hopper and the beloved waffles. A lot of nerds online have asked how he would know about the fact that she likes waffles. To me, there are a ton of explanations, and there's no reason to go into it, you know, there's no reason for the show to have to explain it, because first of all, he could have been told this at any point by one of the kids during the month that we don't see. And also, when she steals the waffles from the supermarket, the police are there when they see it later, and I'm sure that Hopper saw that report, along with the reports of her breaking glass with her mind. So it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to put that together. So that is not a plot hole at all. Let's talk Joyce, played so well by the wonderful Winona Ryder. She's so good in this, freaking out, smoking cigarettes all the time. Yeah, there's an old saying that, a label, I guess, that people used to give actors in the old days, like Humphrey Bogart. They call their performances cigarette acting. Well, if you want to learn cigarette acting these days, fuck Bogart, because this performance by Ryder redefines it. And in a good way, because the Bogart thing, when people used to say cigarette acting, they actually meant it as an insult. But not in Winona Ryder's case. And I get pissed off because I hear some people have said that her performance was over the top. Dude, okay. For any of you who have kids, try to imagine this worst possible scenario ever. Your kid goes missing. Right there, you're going to be freaking out and smoking cigarettes. But then he starts communicating with you through lights. Then a fucking monster comes out of your wall. Then you see a fake body that people are telling you is your kid. And everyone thinks you're a lunatic. Meanwhile, you've got your kid screaming, help me, through a wall. Jesus. And then with Winona Ryder, you get the reverse during those flashback scenes before the freakout, where she just has the regular mom-son moments. So believable. It's a great performance. Spectacular. But as for Joyce herself, According to some research that the fans have done online, some really good stuff happens at the end of the show, which you might not have noticed, and I'll get into it with you. There's more to Joyce than meets the eye, it turns out. To get into that, when Hopper makes his deal with the devil so that he can save Will, he tells Joyce that the condition is they never speak of it again, right? Never happened, all that. But when he says that, Joyce doesn't agree with him. She doesn't say anything. She doesn't even nod. She just looks away. And so we find that later on, at the end of the show, there's a newspaper article that, when freeze framed, says some very interesting things about Joyce. I didn't freeze frame it myself. It didn't occur to me. But I found a nerd. This guy on YouTube. Oh, and by the way, when I refer to these people as nerds, because I do that a lot on this podcast, I'm not making fun of them. I'm right there with them. I mean, listen to me. Listen to what I'm doing. All these people do is take it a couple steps further with elaborate videos where they put Christmas lights all over their living room and they freeze frame things. But thank God for them. Because for you, they can do the legwork. I can curate it all and deliver it to you in one place. But so this guy on YouTube, FoundFlix is his YouTube name. Give proper credit. He took a look at the newspaper articles that are shown on the police bulletin board right near the end of the show. And I'm going to read you what they say because I have it queued up right here on my little YouTube. But before I read it, I have to think that the Duffer brothers were very careful as to what they put in these articles. I mean, the headlines are all relevant to the events of the show. So I have to imagine that they knew that nutcases like me and FoundFlix would read them in full HD freeze frame glory. Here is what is written in these articles. All right. The article says, the boy that came back to life. And you can't make all of the printout, but he freeze framed it. He highlighted it for us. So here's what it says. Joyce Byers alleges that Will was the subject of a secret government program run by the Hawkins National Laboratory. This allegation comes amidst a massive investigation into the hidden organization and its elaborate experiments in perusal of mind control. The abuse detailed in the first report includes prolonged physical duress and psychological interrogation. This government-sanctioned torture has provoked outrage amongst the American people. So are they referring to now? It's provoked outrage now, current investigation? Or are they talking about the stuff that happened, you know, years before that Hopper was looking up? So then, again, next thing in the article, without any earlier reference in the article, has a quote from Ives. No first name, but let's assume that it was not Trisha Ives, but the sister, because Trisha Ives doesn't speak. So they either just slapped this article together from one of the ones that I was talking about that Hopper looked up in the library on the microfiche. But the quote is, in a statement issued yesterday, Ives mentions her disgust. The organization, it's hard to read here. She mentioned her disgust at the organization, saying, our own American people are being treated like the enemy. We should be directing our attention to the real target, the Soviets, not our own daughters and sons. Now, it's hard to make out everything else, but at the end, it says something about Dr. Brenner did not comment under legal advice. So that's Papa. Matt Modine, still alive, not being quoted in articles, or the PR hiding the fact that he's dead, or, you know, hopefully not, but maybe just some shit slapped together from an earlier article. Hard to believe they would do that. But if any of this is intended to be part of the story going forward, then Joyce is a fucking stool pigeon. Spilled her guts. And good for her. There's a couple other headlines on the bulletin board. Not much text that you can read, but the headlines are Hawkins Lab blocks inquiry. All right. Coroner arrested for falsifying autopsy. Now that obviously, they put the fake body into the coroner's room, the fake body of Will, so that makes sense. And then more heads roll in state trooper scandal, which would also make sense because the state troopers were coming in and, you know, taking jurisdiction over the Hawkins Police Department. So, clues, lazy filmmaking, filler. Hard to make a prediction on what that is, but it's interesting stuff. And stuff that you should know and deserve to know as fans. All right, let's talk about the kids. Again, some of the greatest kid actors I've seen. Let's give these kids an Emmy apiece, right? An Emmy apiece. Now, two of them, looking at their backgrounds, did a little research. Two of them actually come from Broadway, cut their teeth in the theater. actually, the kid who plays Dustin didn't have to cut his teeth because the disorder that makes you keep your baby teeth, he really has that. The thing he has in his show, and he can like crack his arm because he has this bone thing that makes his baby teeth stay forever. Or not forever, but until he gets older. He really had that, and they didn't have that in the script, so they just wrote it in. But he comes from Broadway. He was in Les Miserables, touring and on Broadway.
Gaten Matarazzo is his name.
And Lucas, a.k.a. Caleb McLaughlin, played Simba in The Lion King, again on Broadway. So it's no surprise that these two would know what they're doing. But at such a young age, man. Maybe it's just been a while since I've watched a movie with really good kid acting, but you know, usually you get like one, maybe two, three performances out of kids if it's like a classic. But five? Because you got to throw Will and 11 in there, plus the other three. God damn. You know, I used to try to act when I was that age. Took a million classes, did a bunch of plays. I can't fathom the ability of these kids. So I'm not even jealous of them, retroactively. Because you can't be jealous of something you can't fathom. But anyway, for Finn Wolfhard, who plays Mike, he's only been in a couple of movies, supernatural-ish, under-the-radar type things. And apparently, he was cast, or was going to be cast, in a remake of Stephen King's It. But then he had already met the Duffer Brothers, and they wanted him to be in Stranger Things. But he was going to go do It. But then it got shelved, so he came back to Stranger Things. And now that Stranger Things is over, that It remake is back on the table, and now it's going to be set in the 1980s with Finn Wolfhard. Now this kid, actually all the kids, he's on the Twitter, the Instagram, all of them. And they're amazing kids, man. So hopefully long and fruitful careers, you know. So kids, keep your feet on the ground. Don't get all caught up with the fame and fortune. Especially you, Miss Millie Brown, because you got way too much talent for your age. And you probably got more film offers now than Kevin Hart. So don't go too nuts with the glitz and the glamour and the social media. Be a kid, because we want to see all you guys doing great work in 10, 20 years. I want to see Edward Furlong throwing up into a urinal in some gas station off Hollywood Boulevard. Broke. Be Natalie Portman. Be, that guy, the kid actor who's in everything, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Be him. Stay good. But anyway, the characters, where we leave them. Great hints and clues dropped into their last scene when they're playing D&D. Best few lines are when the game is over, and one of the kids says, "It didn't make any sense." And the other kid says, obviously a reference to the series, the other kid says, "What about the Lost Knight and the Proud Princess and the weird flowers in the cave?" So obviously references again, and well done, as usual. We can speculate who the knight is, who the princess is. My own money would be on Hopper and 11. As for the weird flowers, maybe because the monster's head looks like a flower, the Demogorgon, I don't know. Maybe that weird egg that Hopper sees in the Upside Down, thing that looks like straight out of Alien. Looks like it hatched, too, so there's a lot of crazy theories abounding about that online. So that's another great thing dangling to be picked up later. By the way, in relation to that, this was great news. The Duffer Brothers said that they have a 30-page document that details what the Upside Down is, how it got there, what that monster is all about. 30 pages. And that's great stuff, because it's always so good watching a show to know that they know what they're doing. It's not going to be like Lost, when they throw all this shit out there and then the last episode is about a fucking soda machine getting unplugged. Then, of course, the biggest cliffhanger, poor Will. Just about to eat his runny mashed potatoes. Goes to the bathroom, coughs up a monster slug. Little baby Demogorgon. Then the Upside Down flashes for a moment. And the kid takes it like a champ. He just goes back to the table, starts talking D&D. It's a tough kid. Which all the kids are kind of played that way in the end. You know, they all kind of just take the whole thing in stride. Like, they've seen a massacre. They've seen a monster from another world. They've seen a girl with superpowers that nosebleeds all the time when she uses them. And then they're just back to happy kids when it's over. Which, that was kind of the only thing about the show that I didn't like. After Will wakes up, they describe They describe everything to him like it was just a movie. Like they're yucking it up, smiles all around. Even Eleven. They're like, eh, dude, we met this chick who had superpowers, but she's gone. Oh, well. The only thing we get to sort of mourn the character of Eleven is the shot of Mike at the end when they all leave the D&D game. And he's in the basement, turns around, and he looks at her little hut with the walkie-talkie. So there's something that actually indicates that someone is emotionally affected by her death, or even by any of the events. Because if you think about it, those kids, they became friends with Eleven, especially Mike, obviously. They developed a bond with her, but throughout the show, as they went through it, they also kind of used her, obviously not the way Matt Modine used her, but they do kind of use her for her powers. But, you know, at the same time, she's getting to experience the feeling of friendship, and she gets to see what she looks like when she's all pretty. And, you know, so you don't want to have a bummer ending where everybody's depressed. I get it. Like I said, I would have been happy with the snowball ending. The snowball dance for everyone. Everyone can be in it. Let's see Nancy and Jonathan at the snowball, or her and Steve, whatever. Even though it's not a high school dance, let's have everyone there. Copper, his ex-wife get back together. Joyce and her shithead ex, you know, comes around and he's there. Dustin and Lucas are like running around, changing the music, looking up skirts. Steve's dickhead friend is spiking the punch bowl. That's my episode 9. Smiles at the snowball. But then, you know, for suspense, maybe at the end you see the Demogorgon's hand come out of the gym floor or something. I know, it would suck, I know. Fucking snowball ending. Maybe some obsessed fan will write a fan fiction with that. Not me, but someone. Because the fans of the show, obviously, rabid. And there probably will be, and probably is, fan fiction. Because there's videos online on YouTube where people cut together all of Mike and Eleven scenes, and they put like romantic hit songs over it. I like these love songs. And I watched maybe 10 seconds of one, and it made me feel like, I don't know. I'm too old for that kind of thing, and I'll just leave that to the kids to watch. It would have been weird. And there's a limit to my fandom, you know, no matter how far it goes. But there's also people that do those reaction videos. Have you seen those before? People do it for movie trailers and all kinds of stuff. It's just a person in their room on camera with a little picture in picture of what they're watching in real time as they react to it. It's like a, you know, the little screen at the bottom that shows you what they're watching, and then they're sitting there in their room reacting to it. And like they start crying when someone dies, or they'll get all scared when the monster comes. It's amazing. I mean, like I said, I am ass deep in the water with these nerds, but there's still a limit to my time as well as my obsession. Love songs for Mike and Eleven, reaction videos, that's above and beyond. But yeah, I don't judge. Whatever gets you through the night, my friends. More Stranger Things, the better. Getting back to what we have left to look forward to for season 2, or the sequel, as the brothers say. We've got the love triangle. Steve, Jonathan, and Nancy. She ends up, kind of surprisingly, ends up with the douchebag boyfriend, who turns out not to be such a douchebag after all. Which I think was a good turn, because, you know, it's more realistic that she would kind of stick with the boyfriend after he's put his life on the line and, you know, helped kill the monster and everything. He's shown that in his heart, he's not such a douchebag overall. But still, she's sitting with him on the couch and he's wearing that ridiculous Christmas sweater and she's looking sad. And, you know, before that, she gave Jonathan his new camera, gave him a little kiss on the cheek. But she's still with Steve. Even though I would have been happy if Jonathan and her went to the snow. All right, enough about the snowball. I'm sorry. Anyway, the guy who plays Steve, Joe Keery, he was actually supposed to be only in like the first couple episodes. And he was just going to be the one-dimensional 80s douchebag boyfriend with the hair. But apparently they loved his acting so much that they rewrote him into the entire story and gave him an arc. Can I say real quick that I'm so sick of that word arc? every review of anything I ever read anymore, other than by real critics, uses the fucking word arc. I hate it the way our beloved Charlie Crabtree hates the word canon. I think that anyone who says arc, or even canon, I'll throw myself into the mix as well, anyone who uses either of those words more than 4 times a month, or uses it more than once every 3 blog posts, should have to face some kind of penalty. Like, they have to wear one of those director's lenses around their neck for a month. You know, directors have those little camera lens things around their neck so they can peer through them and set up their shots. If you use canon or arc more than 4 times a month, you have to wear one of those everywhere for a month. Because that way, when you meet somebody, they'll come up to you and they'll say, oh, are you in the film business? And you have to say, no, I just have a blog. So anyway, Steve Nancy thing, Jonathan, maybe carrying a torch. We'll see where that goes, among all these other things. And Barb. So many people love Barb. There's campaigns about Save Barb, Bring Back Barb, all over Twitter and stuff. People draw these elaborate pictures and stuff. And Barb was like the ultimate red shirt character. And people are depressed to see her go. I mean, she had a few lines. She dies. She's totally, you know, a disposable character. She's just set up to do that. But, they love her. And the producers said they had no idea that she would become all popular. And they confirmed that, sadly, as Eleven said about her, gone. Gone. But it speaks to how ridiculously popular the show is. And it speaks to why it drove me into a rabbit hole of research. I'm glad I could share it. And it makes me feel like there's some sort of purpose behind my madness. You know, there's something I can do with it, can help others. Hop on the bandwagon with all the 9 million people that have watched the show so far. So Netflix, please get your shit together. Before all these kids start getting too old and taking all kinds of other offers, it takes a long time to make an 8-episode series to be dropped all at once for binge watching. Because think about a show on regular TV. If they're putting on an episode a week, they can still be filming the last few episodes at the same time while they're doing post-production on the ones before. The wheels are still in motion the whole time, but when you put the whole series out at once, you've got to shoot, produce, edit, write, before you can release a frame of it, because you're going to put it out all at once, which I love Netflix for. And starting a new era of how you watch television by them doing that. It's awesome, but get to it, man. And I'll get back to my real life in the meantime. Maybe. So, thanks for listening. I hope this helped your enjoyment of the show. I know it was a short show, but it wasn't planned, and there's only so much information out there, and I wanted to share it with you without wasting a bunch of time just telling you what I feel about it and going into sidetrack about other things. Just wanted to give you like a vitamin B shot right in your ass of Stranger Things. So, again, thanks for listening. Hope this helped your enjoyment of the show. It certainly did for me. Cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Maybe we can go to the snowball.